Okay, and welcome back. Hour number three. Another positive story about hydroxychloroquine. Supposedly now it's been cleared for testing again because it's doing very well in places. All right, be that as it may or may not, that's the latest on hydroxy. Now, this virus seems to have an aversion to infecting Donald Trump and Mike Pence. They have dodged more viral bullets than we could count. Not so some of those closest to them, though. We have another member of the royal family that has become infected. I'll leave that on the shelf just for a moment, let you try and figure out who it is. But we have many stories. It's the end of the week. We're going to wrap things up with Dr. Henry Nyman tonight and then watch what happens over the holiday weekend. Again, I think it's how many days now? Anyway, over 50,000 cases again. I think it's three days now, something like that, maybe four. Henry, welcome back on Friday, and I'll let you tell everyone who has now become infected.
Well, who has been reported as infected? I'm not sure who has become infected because there were a lot of people standing on stage just before Trump was speaking, and those included contacts of Don Jr.'s wife, who was positive for
girlfriend.
I'm sorry, correct. Girlfriend who's positive for the coronavirus. I was getting ahead of myself.
Well, they're not there yet. Kimberly Guilfoyle, the former.
Right.
Was he CNN? Right. Fox? I can't remember. Fox, I guess.
Fox. Yeah. He works for Fox. And she went with him. So she's in South Dakota. And,
right.
And they went out a few days early because they were doing fundraising with prominent donors. So all these prominent donors who were at this event were at these fundraising events where she was present.
Oh, my.
And she apparently is asymptomatic, but, of course, she could be pre-symptomatic. And,
right.
Of course, the assay that she was positive today almost certainly is this assay that they use at the White House that's quick but not very sensitive. So, for Stephen Miller's wife, Katie Miller, who is Pence's press secretary, he tested positive, but she was symptomatic the day before she tested positive. And if she was being tested daily or even every other day, that test would have given a false negative because she was symptomatic.
Right.
She would have definitely had virus for several days prior to that. And that had gone undetected. He was positive after he was symptomatic. So the assay is not very good that they're using. And they said Don Jr. is negative, but I'm sure it's on the same assay. And Don is there on stage standing next to Daddy and Mommy and all the, or I guess it's not his mother, but his stepmommy, and all these other dignitaries. We're on stage, all kind of in a group, nobody wearing a mask. I didn't see a single mask. They showed the crowd. I didn't see any masks there. They had some military band playing, you know, just in front of them. I didn't see anybody there wearing a mask. I mean, the only people I've seen wearing masks have been reporters. So they're all without masks. And, you know, Trump's talking about, saving the monuments, and so that's his theme, or at least that's how it started. So he just got started right before we went on the air, so I haven't had a chance to really see him say a whole lot. But it kind of highlights, and Katie Miller was Pence's press secretary, who would have had significant contact with pets. And so they haven't been reported as being positive, but it's not at all clear that they weren't. He was kind of relegated to another building for about a week or so, and he was wearing a mask, and it's very possible he was infected, and he just either was asymptomatic or had mild symptoms.
Henry, whatever happened to Katie Miller? She just vanished.
Yeah, I know. I was looking on Twitter to see when she was going to come back and say anything, and she never really did. She retweeted a couple things, and actually, I haven't looked recently, but that whole time period, she disappeared, and for at least a couple of weeks after that report, I didn't see anything from her other than a retweet here or there. And so I don't know. I don't know if she's back and just has a lower profile or what. But the point is that, and then the other story that came out this morning was that Pence had to delay his trip, I think, to Arizona because 8 Secret Service tested positive, and then it was 8 to 10. So there were 8 to 10 that apparently tested positive. The initial story said they either tested positive or were symptomatic. So
right.
It sounds like since that initial story, the ones that were symptomatic were confirmed, and
uh-huh.
So that's 8 that were positive. So I don't know how many other Secret Service agents are contacts and are quarantined because of that episode with Pence. And now I'm sure there'll be another series from this trip to South Dakota if Don Jr.'s girlfriend is positive. And it's certainly possible that she's infected many additional ones because you're usually shedding the highest amount of virus, like 1 to 3 days before you develop symptoms. And,
right.
You know, she might be symptomatic in the next couple of days. But it's just yet another example where Trump is really a mobile, toxic dump that he runs around the country, exposes people that feel an obligation to show up and not wear a mask. And he won't wear a mask, even though he recently said that he doesn't really, you know, see a problem with wearing a mask. He's kind of evolving that position where before it was just Democrats at war to make him look bad. So everything's about him. So he interprets everything that whatever anybody does, it has to do with him. And so Democrats are only wearing masks to make him look bad, not to do anything about the virus. And that's what all these laws are, you know, on regulating, you know, wearing a mask if you go outside or if you can't socially distance. But the number is increasing that are close to Trump and Pence. I don't think that either Trump or Pence would make the news unless they went to the hospital. And, of course, Trump did go to the hospital. They never really
yeah,
did. First
nobody ever talked about that except us, I guess.
He's never taken the second part of the physical. And
that wasn't even
no
the
way.
Yeah.
Well, I know. Yeah, there's no way he would go to the hospital for the first part of a physical. He's got a doctor.
Was it 10 o'clock at night? Something like that? Ridiculous.
No, it was during the day, but it was a whole caravan. I mean, you know, there were like 10 cars or something. No, I think it was like in the middle of the afternoon.
Okay.
And they rushed
whatever.
Him there. And
it's just, the whole thing is obviously deceit. So.
Right. Because if he's going for a physical, he doesn't have to have a 10-car caravan going to the hospital. He needs one doctor showing up who's actually on-site anyway that's running the test. So there was no way that was the first part of his physical. It's never really been identified what
that's
it
ridiculous.
Was. But Trump's reaction, I mean, when the positives were found for the earlier event he didn't want the first question was, well, did you tell anybody? And then he went and had six other people tested so that he could come up with a story saying that nobody was positive when they were tested. And so he definitely wants to keep any positives, you know, under wraps. And he definitely would not admit that he was positive, and he wouldn't allow Pence to admit that he was positive.
Never. No,
and these other stories kind of leak out. And it just goes to show how dangerous it is. If he can't protect the Secret Service agents, and he can't protect contacts of family members or press secretaries, then he certainly can't protect the fans. And this is why we have, you know, over 50,000 new cases, you know, as you said, 3 days in a row. Although technically, California didn't update 2 days ago. So I really only ended up with 49,900. If you rounded, it was 50,000 2 days ago. It set a record yesterday at around 56,000. Today, it's about 52,000, but it's a holiday weekend. So Michigan didn't report today. Illinois didn't report today. Oregon didn't report today. And Hawaii didn't report today. So, you know, the number was probably pretty close to the 56,000 record 2 days in a row now. And that's what the issue is. The issue is that the number is high. This weekend will probably be impacted significantly because of the 4th. So I'm not sure what kind of numbers are going to come out tomorrow and the next day and even on Monday. But by next Tuesday, they'll be back in gear. And if it got up to 60,000 by next Tuesday, it wouldn't surprise me. And Fauci's worried about going to 100,000 a day, and that seems almost inevitable. It's just a question of, you know, is it going to get to 100,000 by the middle of this month or by the end of this month? But there's one projection that not only will it double and get to 100,000 by the middle of this month, but that it'll double again by the end of this month. So by the beginning of August, it could be up to 200,000 cases per day. And no other country is in that ballpark. The closest is Brazil, which is another disaster zone. And the reason the U.S. is in this position is because who's in charge or who's nominally in charge. I mean, nobody's in charge. It's, and actually, that
we have no
Trump's
leadership.
New,
let's just sum
new,
it up.
New
that
position.
Way. No
new position. Hold it. He's got a new position now. Okay.
Oh.
So the new position is no longer. It'll just go away.
Oh,
like
yeah.
A miracle.
It.
It'll disappear.
Yeah.
It's none of those.
No. I said more clever.
It's now live with it. It's it's here. We can't really do anything about it.
We need to live
just
with it.
Live with it. Yeah. So
this
that's
kind of look. Hold on.
Do nothing is to do nothing and to say nothing and to just drop dead. He's telling his supporters. He's telling his senior citizens he needs to get reelected, right? Which
is that's right. Just live with it or die with it.
Right. Right. So he's saying, nothing I can do. You know, hopefully you'll still be alive in November and you can go ahead and vote. And,
we need that vote.
Be sure to do it in person, because I'm going to say that all the mail-ins are fraudulent. They were all sent by China. So that's his plan. That's his plan.
Here's the question, he'll
declare an emergency because...
Yeah. This is completely out of control, and no chance to rein it in. It's not going to happen. And I think that's probably what's behind his statement, we need to live with it. But the question is, are we going to see what we initially thought, the virus running through from sea to shining sea, just running through the entire populace? It's not going to be stopped, correct?
Correct. It's going to go through the populace. It's a matter of how many people are going to die and how much mitigation there's going to be. It's not going to be stopped. As I said yesterday, pandemics do not disappear. The nature of a pandemic is that the virus is so infectious and so easily transmitted that it spreads around the world, in spite of the fact that people know about it. And they know it's coming, and there's nothing they can do about it. I mean, Trump did all these barn door closings, you know, after the horse was out of the barn and said, oh, I prevented this and I prevented that. He's got zero data that shows he prevented anything. That by the time he put bans on, they were to a small percentage of the people that were infected and coming to the U.S., and there was already many, many times that already here spreading the virus, and his ban didn't do anything other than set the stage. So now the U.S. is banned. Canada doesn't want us going there. Europe doesn't want us going there. Nobody wants the U.S. going anywhere. Mexico doesn't want us going there. Nobody wants Americans.
Mexico closed part of the border today.
Right, right. I'm not surprised because there's the highest concentration of COVID is right here. I mean, there's 330 million people. There's almost 3 million cases. There's like 2.7 or 2.8 million cases. There's 130,000 that are dead, and now there's 50-some-odd thousand new cases every day, and that number is going up because nobody is really doing anything about it. They're closing a few beaches. They're going to say, well, you need to wear masks if you're outside, but there's no real lockdowns, and the first lockdown was only partially effective. There were states that basically put it on too late and took it off too early. And then there were people within the states who just ignored it. And so it wasn't, and as a result, the viral level never really got that low. In the areas that were hard hit, like New York and New Jersey, and Massachusetts, they kept the lockdown on longer and more people kind of followed it because they knew that there were a lot of people that were getting infected and the hospitals were getting overrun.
Well, they followed it because of all those public executions. They always work, you know, when you want the people to do something, you just shoot a few.
Yeah. Well, there was a
little humor.
You got to
laugh at something. Look, this is all, when you watch de Blasio and Cuomo attacking each other and the madness that is clearly going on in New York City, it just, I don't know. What are you going to do except laugh?
Well, they actually are down to, I think today there were 7 deaths. They're in single digits now as far as daily deaths for
the entire
state. So it's
That's because most people have already died.
It's what?
Most people have already died there, that's why.
No, I don't think so.
Not many left to die, Henry. Oh, Look, this is really an unprecedented thing. The only thing I'm seeing in the media that I'd like you to comment on, if you would, directly, is this. There's a refrain, and it's the longer the virus runs rampant, the weaker it gets. Now, that's still out there, and I'd like you to set the record straight on that.
The record is totally contaminated by the media's lousy coverage of the virus. There was another story that came out today, and just so your listeners know, the way these stories come out is most of the time there is some type of announcement or publication. So there was a publication that came out. It's actually a pre-publication, but it's already been accepted. So you could access it. It's in the journal Cell, and it's more of the same on the Italian lineage. Okay, and it goes into detail. It's actually out of the UK. Sheffield Group, and the Sheffield Group collaborated on the first paper that was with the group from Los Alamos, and it was essentially the same thing. They noted that this virus was spreading and was becoming dominant, and it was showing up everywhere, and that it transmitted more efficiently, and it had one change that seemed to be responsible, and one that they looked at closely, and that was in the spike protein. It was at position 614, the D changed to the G, and that's why G said they called it the G clad. And that is the change that was first in northern Italy, and then became dominant in New York, and then it became dominant in Connecticut, and you could follow the dominance because they were releasing the sequences. And all the sequences had these same four mutations. In addition to the one at the spike protein, they had one in a non-coding region at position 241. All the other ones were C's changing to T's. So there was one in the non-coding region at position 241. There was one that was silent in the open reading frame 1A at position 3037. And there was one at the polymerase at position 14408. And that actually did make an amino acid change, the P to an L at position 323. And those are the four changes that were present in northern Italy in early February.
Right.
So the lineage is not new. It's been around since, is known to have been around since early February, with sequences being published from collections in early February from northern Italy. And there literally have been, I think, close to 60,000 sequences now that are at GSAD. And this Italian lineage with all four of those changes that I mentioned, plus generally one or two or three additional ones, and they've actually divided it up into two other subplates that have those four plus at least one other change. But they all have the same four, including the spike protein, and that those three different versions, all with the spike protein change, account for something like 75 to 80% of all sequences. And that includes the ones that were sequenced at the beginning of the outbreak before this lineage was even known to exist. Mm-hmm. And so of the recent outbreaks, or the recent sequences, it's in the 90 to 95% range of all the sequences that have come out throughout the world are this particular lineage. So there's nothing, zero data that says anything about it getting milder. There is not a single sequence that anybody can point to and say, oh, this is the change in this virus that leads to a milder disease.
Right.
Zero data. There are a bunch of people that know nothing about sequences, don't have a clue, and are misrepresenting the current situation because they're generally, they're not hands-on. They don't know how to read a sequence. And they're senior people that basically kind of heard about it. They kind of heard about it, but they didn't really get the details. And they go and they kind of ad lib and come up and say, and I won't even say who they are, but these are at the highest level. And it was like one that I heard yesterday was, well, there's this new lineage or new strain, I think they call it. And, it might make the virus, replicate more quickly. And that's still being analyzed. Okay. And then there's another story that came out this morning and they said, oh, well, it seems that the death rate is down and, it might have something to do with this new lineage. There's a new lineage. I think it was a new paper that came out in Science. And it's about this new strain that's come out, and that
which
and
we've
that
been
might
talking
be
about here for 4 months,
right? And that might account for the lower level of the lower death rate. And they put these things out there, and then there's another one that came out. These are very high level scientists. They should know better. They're going to open up their mouth. They should read the paper or they should get somebody to interpret the paper for them before putting out these nonsense stories.
This program's a goldmine of information.
And then the other one came out and said, well, there's this new strain and, there's some areas where it seems to be pretty common, but, that might be a founder effect. A founder effect means that it got there first and then expanded, and so that's what you find. And those are blatantly false statements, easily proven to be false. The virus, A, isn't new. It started back in early February. B, many of the places it went to where it was identified, where it became dominant, it wasn't dominant when it first came there. It wasn't a founder mutation. It wasn't a founder strain that showed up early and kind of captured the area, if you will, and then was dominant. It came into areas that had other lineages and took over those other lineages.
Right.
And so the idea that it's in some areas, it's throughout the entire world. There's 50,000 sequences, actually closer to 60,000 sequences, that come from they are throughout the world. And that is the dominant strain. It's the strain that's causing all the problems in Russia. It's the strain that's causing all the problems in Brazil. It's the strain that's causing all the problems in India. And it's the strain that's causing all the problems in the U.S. It's not a few areas. It's the entire world. It's almost all of the new sequences. It has taken over the world. And there have been three publications, all of which came out long after it was obvious what was going on. It was clear as soon as the sequences started to be released from New York. When the New York sequences were being released, 90% of them were the Italian lineage. And it came from one hospital, and then it came from another hospital, then it came from another hospital. And
right.
It started out mostly with cases that were in Manhattan, and then it spread out to cases that were on Long Island. And then it was cases that were in all five of the boroughs of New York. And then it was in upstate New York. And it didn't matter where they got the sequences. The vast majority of the sequences everywhere in New York were the Italian lineage. And then when they released the sequences from Connecticut, initially it was another lineage. And then it was taken over by the Italian lineage. And when they released the sequences from Massachusetts, it was the Italian lineage. When they released them from Philadelphia, it was the Italian lineage. When they released them from New Orleans, it was the Italian lineage. When they released them from Detroit, it was the Italian lineage. And when
right.
they released them from Chicago, it was mostly the Italian lineage.
Uh-huh.
So, and now all of these cases in the South are the Italian lineage. The only
yeah.
places where it isn't as dominant is maybe the northwest corner of the U.S., Northern California. And it used to be not present at all in the Seattle area. Now it's higher than the ORF8 lineage that was there initially. So it's
right.
caught up with that and is taking over there. But it's not at 90%. It's a little over 50% now, but it used to be at 0%. And then in Asia, it's relatively rare, but they're scared to death of it. I mean, that's what happened in Beijing. When Beijing went and tested, I don't remember what, 11 million people or so, because they were worried about this outbreak that they had, and they weren't even that sick. They were mostly asymptomatic, or they had mild disease, but they had a bunch of them. That was all
right.
the Italian lineage. And that's what they're concerned about. The Italian lineage wasn't there initially. So the idea that the new virus is causing milder disease is crazy, because the new virus is the one that caused all the deaths in Northern Italy.
In Italy, sure.
And it will cause... And it's caused all the deaths in New York.
And Iran.
I mean, no, not so much Iran. Iran was another lineage. The Middle East was different. But throughout Europe,
okay.
it spread throughout Europe, and then it spread to Africa, and then it spread to South America, and then it spread to North America. And it was everywhere. But it wasn't a founder in places like, I mean, the first two cases in New York were not the Italian lineage. One of them was the one that caused the outbreak in New Rochelle, and that one was actually the ORF8 lineage, but it wasn't the one in Seattle. It was actually the one from Europe. So, I mean, it did come from Europe, but it wasn't the Italian lineage. And then the other one that came to New York was somebody who had traveled from Iran, and that was the lineage that was in the Middle East. It wasn't the Italian lineage. So it doesn't have to be first. It takes over the area. It's not in a few areas. It's everywhere. There are a few areas where it hasn't become dominant yet, and they're the earlier cases. The places that haven't become dominant yet are places like Seattle area, which had the first case in the U.S., and cases like Asia, which basically got the spillover from China, you know, early
right.
on. So they had the Wuhan strain, the strain that didn't have any changes yet. It matched the original sequence that was isolated in Wuhan. So that was picked up in various countries in Asia, as well as the west coast of
right.
the U.S.
All right. Let's take a little bit of a different tack right now. Here we are, July, the beginning of July. There's been no seasonal, in fact, the opposite. There's been no seasonal diminution. There's a massive increase, as you forecast months ago, likely to happen, and it's happened exactly as you forecasted. we're now going to see a long, hot summer of infectivity and probably deaths here in the next few weeks. This means fall is coming in a few months, 3 months, 12 weeks, and then we've got flu season. What do you, for two questions. One, anything new on what Fauci described as that H1N1 combination new potentially animal jump to human virus in China? And two, what do you feel about, or have you seen anything about the projections for normal influenza season this fall?
Yeah, well the virus in China is just kind of a warning that there's no data that says is transmitting widely. There's antibody data that suggests that some farmers have been infected, and that's kind of what raised the concern. The virus is mostly the swine flu, which is everywhere. It's the current now seasonal H1N1. So a seasonal H1N1, i.e. the swine flu that jumped species back in 2009. So the basic virus can infect humans. It's the H1N1 that's already created a pandemic in 2009 and it's throughout the world. And it's dumped into pigs. It's dumped into pigs here. It's all over the U.S. in pigs. It's all over
same
South
virus.
America.
Not augmented, not changed. It's the same virus.
Right. The virus that caused the humans is in pigs. And what they're seeing in China is some of the gene segments have changed. It's not one particular combination has emerged that has got mostly the swine flu genes. There's eight segments. So most of the segments are from the swine flu, and one or two or three of the segments are from the triple reassortants in Asia. These are viruses that have some genes from avian, they have some genes from human, and they have some genes from swine. And that's, in fact, what the H1N1 swine flu was. It was the same thing. It was also a triple reassortant. So what they've seen in China is what's been seen in the U.S., where you got the swine flu in swine, but it's picked up a few of the segments that were in swine but didn't jump to humans. So it's a little bit of a different combination. And the only reason they're sounding the alarm is not because they've got a combination that looks more dangerous, or not because a new combination has emerged so it's very dominant. It's because farmers associated with these swine have antibodies indicating that some of the virus has jumped to humans, but it doesn't indicate that it's transmitting human to human. It could very well just be transmitting swine to human. And the virus transmits swine to human all the time. I mean, before the swine flu created a pandemic in 2009, in the U.S., the CDC was monitoring triple reassortant. And they were monitoring humans that had been affected with triple reassortant. And they had something like 13 different examples, a couple of which were clusters. But these were people that did have contact with swine or somebody else, you know, who had contact from swine, because there were a couple of human clusters. And they were infected, and they isolated the virus from them, and they had flu-like symptoms, and it didn't go beyond that. But there were 13 different instances before the swine flu emerged. And the thing that was unusual about the swine flu was that it had some segments that were Asian, Eurasian versus the ones that were in the U.S. prior to that. They all had North American genes. So,
okay.
This is the same thing. Since this triple reassortant has some Asian and some North American genes, that's what's over there, and now it's picking up some more of the Asian gene segment. But it's something to keep an eye on. There's no data that says it's spreading human to human. It's spreading swine to human. And that's not unusual.
Excuse me, Henry. If we get an H2H report and a small cluster, then we should begin to pay more attention. Correct?
Yeah. Although, just as a reminder, what happened with the swine flu, and the reason you knew that there was a problem, is that the first two cases in the U.S. were two children. They were two boys that were in adjacent counties in Southern California. One was in San Diego County. The other was in Imperial County. And they both had the same sequence. But the reason that result was concerning wasn't because they had human to human. It was because they had two humans that had no history of contact with swine and no history of contact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So when you got that and you had two different children, both in Southern California, but they were like 100, 150 miles apart, there was no indication that it had passed from one of them to the other. Instead, since they had the same virus and they didn't have contact with swine, they got it from other humans. And those other humans didn't have contact with each other, so there had to be a whole lot of humans in between. So basically, the fact that the same sequence was present in both, and this was a fairly novel sequence. Like I said, it had some Eurasian segments in addition to North American segments, and it was a triple reassortant. But all the triple reassortants in the U.S. had all North American, and all of the human cases had contact with swine. So it wasn't a big surprise. It was swine to human. So these two, even though they didn't have a direct, now it turned out that they had other family members that had symptoms. But by the time they identified this novel virus in these two children, and they went back to the family members, they didn't have symptoms anymore, and there wasn't anything to test to show that it had been human to human, other than saying, well, did anybody else in your family have flu-like symptoms? And they said, yeah, our parents or our brothers had it, but they're better now. And actually, by the time they got around to identifying the virus, I think the children might have been better already. You know, they had already recovered from it. They had it was like a flu. It was a flu, but it was like a seasonal flu. And it wasn't something that they got particularly sick. What was striking was that it was a combination of swine flu that they hadn't seen previously, and both children had the identical sequences. I mean, they had the
got
same
it.
Combination. I mean, there might have been a minor difference, but it was definitely the same swine flu. So that has not been seen. So that would be the concerning part, would be that if you have people that didn't have contact with swine but did have the same sequence, which was an unusual sequence that you hadn't really seen in humans before, then that would be an indication that it is transmitting human to human, although you wouldn't have a direct evidence of that. But eventually, you would start to get clusters. And that's what happened with the swine flu in 2009. After these two children were identified, then you started getting these reports. Oh, we just saw this sequence in Texas, and we just saw this sequence in San Diego. You know, not just San Diego County, but over in San Diego itself. Or, oh, there's now a report that we see some of it in Mexico. Oh, there's somebody who had gone to Mexico, and now they're in Canada, and they had it. And then there's all these students went on spring break down to Mexico, and they came back and they've got flu-like symptoms, and they all got the same novel virus. And then you knew it was off and running. and it was all over the place, and it was the same novel sequence. So that's how you're going to know that this one's jumped, because usually once they jump, they start spreading pretty quickly, because this is going from swine to human. So it's already mammalian. It's already able to transmit mammal to mammal, you know, swine to swine. And then if it jumps to humans and then it starts transmitting to humans, it'll transmit relatively efficiently, and you'll start seeing this show up all over the place. I mean, they would test as H1N1, but then if you went and you do a test to see how well it reacts with the current Anna sera, if the H is changed, you know, it's a different H1, then it would not, it would show up as a low reactor. It wouldn't react well with the existing vaccine. And then you know you have something. So that's now as far as seasonal flu, that's a lot harder to predict exactly what's going to be happening with seasonal flu with this upcoming season. And like I mentioned, it could be impacted by COVID because, you know, some of the response is by antibodies that recognize the H for the flu, or they recognize the spike protein for COVID. But there are other cytokines, you know, the kind that you see in these cytokine storms, that aren't that specific for a given species of virus. Some of them just go after RNA viruses, and both COVID and flu are RNA viruses. So if you elicit a response because you've got COVID, that might give you some protection for getting the flu. So it's possible that if there's a huge outbreak of COVID, which is very possible, let's be on that, which is likely, and even more likely or more likely to be, you know, more severe in the U.S., that might keep the flu level somewhat lower. Because that's kind of what happened with swine flu. When swine flu emerged in the spring of 2009, it became dominant. So in the fall, when flu season began, it had already outcompeted. There was no H1N1. There was no H3N2, and there wasn't even any influenza B. All of the flu in the fall of 2009 was swine flu. So it had kind of beat all of those out, and people that got infected with that basically had antiviral activity, and that prevented the other strains of virus from taking off, from reemerging and starting up in the new flu season. And so the same thing could happen with COVID. If there's a ton of COVID, the level of flu may be decreased because of the immune response to the COVID. So
may or may not. We don't know yet.
Right. So all I'm saying is you're not guaranteed that you're going to have both of these at very high levels. It's possible that one will influence the other. The influence is going to be COVID because they've already got the inside track. They're already here. I mean, the flu season hasn't really got going. COVID's already present. It's already producing antivirals in people that are infected, and that may offer protections for them from being infected with the flu, and then the flu may have trouble getting going.
Well, we may have a hell of a problem come this fall. We don't know yet. We just don't know.
Well, we do know we'll have a hell of a problem.
Well, with COVID.
We don't know how much flu will contribute to it, but COVID will definitely be a problem.
Oh, yeah.
Regardless of
I'm just thinking about the influenza aspect.
Whether it knocks out influenza or not. So the influenza
really awful.
It's going to be really, really awful anyway. Because
I agree.
The virus transmits more easily. It hangs around longer. So the COVID is going to be a problem all by itself. And
understood.
If people start to develop some immunity, then it'll evolve and you'll get new versions of it. And it not only won't be affected by the antibodies that people had because they were infected the first time, but it also won't be affected by the new vaccine. So by the time the vaccine's ready at the beginning of next year, there may be a whole new COVID, SARS-CoV-2 strain circulating. It's already escaped from that immune response.
That's right.
Anyway.
Wow, you got it nailed. We have presented. I'm very proud of everything we've done here since January the 8th. And to see some of these big name scientists clearly having not paid attention, they're not up to date, they're not up to speed, they're not reading, and all they would have had to do would be to have listened to Henry here and yours truly doing our best every night to bring you the latest. So it's here. Share it. Pass it around. Tell other people. Henry, thank you. Have a good weekend. Be well. Take care, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
Okay. Have a good fourth. Talk to you on Monday. Take care.
All righty. Okay. That's our week for you. We will be right back Monday and watch what happens in Mount Rushmore. They're online right now. I'm looking at Trump Talk. He does that a lot, doesn't he? All right. You be well. Take care, everyone. Talk soon.